Okay, so what I was asked to talk about today was the pseudo-gap condo model and then some related topics. In particular, I spent a bit of time in the talk trying to tie into two talks from Friday. I mentioned a little bit some connections with what Theo Koster talked about, and primarily I'll talk a little bit about trying to interpret experiments, the NMR experiments that Henri Aoul and co-workers have carried out on the non-managing impurities in YBCO. So this is work that's taken place over a rather long number of years now with my former student Carlos Gonzalez Buxton and Chimiao Si and his group in an ongoing collaboration, and also a little bit of work with Ralph Buhler at Augsburg. And so this little cartoon illustrates what I'm going to be talking about. Basically, it's the effects on magnetic impurities of coupling to a fermionic bath in which the density of states has a point singularity or a point node at the Fermi surface. And this model turns out, the condo model for this situation turns out to have a great deal of richness. So I'll describe the pseudo-gap condo model. Let's talk about the various fixed points, the phase diagram of this model. It turns out to be, as I said, very rich. I'll describe the condo effect in this system. There's some rather bizarre properties in the limit of strong coupling, but it turns out that this can really be interpreted as a rather natural generalization of Fermi liquid. So there are some strange power laws, but they just simply arise from the density of states effects. This model also, though, has an interacting critical point, and this critical point has some very non-trivial critical properties associated with it, in which there are powers which are not simply related to the power of the density of states. So there are some anomalous exponents in this problem. I'll talk a little bit about the thermodynamic properties at this critical point. Actually, it turns out there are two such critical points in some situations, and also the local critical properties. And so the connection to the title, the discussion of the critical local moments, comes in here. It turns out that the local moment behavior goes critical, and there's critical slowing down and vanishing of the condo energy scale right at this critical point. And there's some interesting critical properties, including some features such as omega over t scaling, which have some parallels with behavior found in lattice systems. So this is the sort of pure theory part, and I'll try and make a connection to the NMR data on YBCO, which we heard about on Friday. And then very briefly, I'll also talk about possible extensions of this to the lattice. So let me just sort of orient you with what the pseudo-gap condo model is by trying to contrast it with the conventional condo model. So it's the standard condo Hamiltonian. The only real energy scale in this is the condo coupling J, and I will always take J to be positive, meaning antiferromagnetic. Well, I'll only consider the spin 1/2 impurity. There are lots of variations of the condo model, of course, but we'll stick to the simplest condo model. And for simplicity, I'll choose this rather unrealistic but tractable density of states, where the important point is the density of states vanishes as you approach the Fermi energy, taken to be absolutely equal to zero, according to this power R. This power R will appear throughout the talk. And I'll comment that in future, from now on, J is going to have some sort of density of states factors absorbed into it. So J will be dimensionless from now on. It'll basically be J over the bandwidth or something like that. So don't be afraid if you see pure J's appearing as exponents and things. So the standard condo model corresponds to the case R equals zero. That would describe a metal. And of course, the interesting thing about the condo model is that for any antiferromagnetic J, at some sufficiently low temperature, an exponentially small temperature scale, the impurity moment is going to be screened out. So at high temperatures, the impurity can cause spin flip scattering of electrons, but much below this condo scale, basically the impurity becomes a structureless scatterer. And so spin flip scattering is no longer allowed. You're left with basically pure potential scattering. And of course, the basic ideas were captured very nicely by Anderson in the poor man's scaling theory, where you can look at the effective renormalization of the coupling J as you reduce the effective bandwidth or the temperature in the problem. And as you lower the D, this rate of change of the coupling is proportional to J squared. It's always positive, and so whatever coupling you start with, you always head off to the strong coupling limit. So that's the standard condom model. Now, if we contrast that with the pseudo-GAC or Powell case, this situation with R greater than zero, this was introduced by Witthoff and Fracken. It was essentially introduced initially, I believe, as a sort of toy model. Eduardo Fracken wanted to find a theory project for an experiment. He had an experimental student who wanted to do some theory, and so he sort of invented this toy model. But it can be argued, you can argue this situation is relevant for describing situations in semi-metals and zero-gap semiconductors. And also, in a crude sort of fashion, it can represent correlated systems. This is a non-interacting conduction band, but nonetheless, the single particle density of states is somewhat similar to what you would find, say, in a Luttinger liquid, where you have a power law zero, as you, where the power R would depend on the correlation strength, the interaction strength. And so, using a combination of Poisson scaling and large N, Witthoff and Fracken realized that we have two effects now. We have the tendency, the many-body physics, which is driving you towards strong coupling, but also you have the, now you have the density of states has been eaten away as you approach the Fermi energy, so there's a competition between these two effects. And in fact, now the impurity is only screened for J exceeding some finite critical coupling. And also the low energy scale below which this screening takes place now no longer has an exponential form, it now has a power law form with a power gap, which is roughly 1 over R. And so again, this can be captured in a Poisson scaling equation where now the rate at which J increases as you lower the bandwidth is proportional to J, not J squared, but J squared minus R times J. And so if J is greater than R, you head off to strong coupling. And if J is less than R, you fall back to weak coupling. Asymptotically, at low temperatures, you expect the impurity to decouple from the conduction band. And then at J equals R in this approach, where generally J equals some J critical, you would find a critical point where there's no renormalization whatsoever.
But no, but that's something that the term as a non-trivial term to first order in J.
Excuse me?
The linear term in J.
Yes, this is simply a... This is simply reflecting the density of states. Yes, yes, purely a dimensional effect.
It's no longer a marginal.
Right, it's like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is an apparently rather simple idea, and you might think that that was all there was to it. As I said, it was introduced as an exercise for a student, but it's turned out to be surprisingly rich, and so I described as 12 years of toil. People have applied themselves vigorously to this problem since 1990. I'm not going to go through all this, of course. This is just to give you some sense of the amount of work that's been done on the problem and the variety of methods that have been used, starting with this Poisson scaling technique, which can be applied in various situations. Large N was also influential at the start. It turns out that it's rather subtle, though. You have to handle it with a lot of care, and so quite a few features were initially missed in the large N. Numerical renormalization group work, which has turned out to be this method which Theocosti described on Friday, has turned out to be very reliable in this problem. And it gives non-perturbative answers, which you can usually trust. A little bit of work in the non-crossing approximation. In certain limited situations, you can get something out of perturbation theory. And then recently also, there's been a method proposed by David Logan called the local moment approximation, which is sort of an going beyond Hartree-Fock in a way which captures some of the dynamics and actually has also turned out to be quite successful.
Does that capture the critical properties?
Well, okay, so the answer is that it's very limited. It's rather limited in the sense that it basically only gets at the spectral function, and it's the spectral function doesn't have any non-trivial properties to it, as I'll come back to explain. It turns out that it doesn't capture the things which are really interesting, but it turns out to be rather good at describing the strong and weak coupling limits. Now, you may notice a couple of your favorite techniques are not present. The conformal field theory methods, which Andreas and Inaflik pioneered and used so successfully for the regular Kondo problem, doesn't seem to be applicable here because we don't have a conformal invariance. And also, the problem doesn't seem to be integrable. So beta ansatz methods haven't been useful. So I think the situation, it's fair to say the situation is there's an enormous amount of data certain amount of empirical understanding, but we're still looking for the sort of really simple, clean description of the, particularly the critical point of this problem. And I think it'd be really nice to understand this, because it's a relatively simple model, but it's still, even after 12 years, it's still challenging as to understand what's really going on. In order to connect a little bit with what Theo Costi was saying, let me just briefly mention how the numerical renormalization group would be applied to this problem, since I'm going to be showing a lot of NRG data. And so, as we heard on Friday, the NRG approach maps the continuum Kondo-Hamiltonian, or any quantum impurity problem, onto a chain Hamiltonian, the chain describing a sequence of states. There's a sort of Vanier state to which the impurity couples, the most localized state you can construct about the impurity site, and then the various states onto which an electron in that localized state can hop under the action of the conduction band Hamiltonian. So the innermost state is this C0, and so this part here is the Kondo interaction, and here's the conduction band expressed in a sort of Lanczos form. The original continuum problem will be described by this parameter lambda being set to 1. By introducing a lambda greater than 1, you introduce an artificial separation of scales so that these couplings decay exponentially along the chain, and that allows us to use an iterative approach to solving the problem. You have to worry about whether that produces the right result. I'll come back and mention that in a minute, but anyway, that's the scheme. All the information about the conduction band is contained in epsilon n and tn, these hopping coefficients. For a constant density of states, basically, with a symmetric conduction band, you'd have epsilon n is equal to 0, and these tn's would basically approach 1. Okay, so eventually, at asymptotically low energies, the Hopping coefficients are all the same after you've taken out this rescaling factor. With the power law density of states with this exponent r, it turns out you get an odd-even alternation. So the main feature is that the Hopping coefficient for an odd integer n here is lower than that at even integers by this factor lambda to the minus r over 2. So the exponent of the density of states enters explicitly right there. Then, as everybody knows, the numerical renormalization group allows you to calculate non-perturbatively properties, first of all, the many-body eigenstates, but also matrix elements between those eigenstates, and therefore to calculate properties. What's maybe not quite so... yes?
In case r equal to 0, I thought that the matrix elements of T is dk.
I pulled out the decay out front very explicitly. Yeah, that's the crucial element of the of getting the NRG to work in the first place. I pull that out, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then you expect those things will grow.
No, these guys goes up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down after you've taken out the scaling factor.
Faster or slower than in the case r equal to 0?
It decays at exactly the same rate. It's just that, So if you take the scaled hopping coefficient as a function of n, in the r equals 0 case, it basically, at least for large n, is constant.
Right.
And then in this case, what we have instead is something like this. Okay, it simply bounces around and it alternates between odd and even. And the ratio of them is such that for odd, it's lambda to the minus r over 2 of the even. So that's all it is. It's still a hopping Hamiltonian. It still has the same overall exponential decay going like lambda to the minus n over 2. It's simply, rather than having uniform coefficients after you've taken out the scaling factor, they alternate. So as I said, you can get numerical results, but also the other thing is that this method is useful. It essentially allows you to do perturbative scaling at the same time. You can analyze the fixed point properties analytically by studying the weak and strong coupling. You expect the properties of just the conduction band to be important, and so we're able to analyze the relevance and irrelevance of various operators analytically and figure out which are the relevant perturbations. And then the all important point is that the impurity properties you calculate, even for the impurity properties, and I emphasize the impurity properties, the contributions induced purely by the impurity calculated for lambda greater than 1, in the discretized problem closely reproduce those of the continuum problem. That's not true if you're trying to calculate something like the global ground state energy of the system. Okay, the bulk properties are not captured correctly in this approach, but as long as you take impurity property defined as the bulk, the total value of the property in the presence of the impurity minus the total value of the property in the absence of the impurity, then this method very cunningly produces the correct continuum results. And that was Wilson's genius to ensure that that was true. Okay, so having told you that there have been 20-odd papers on this and 12 years of work and so on, this simple picture, so I told you there's a simple picture, a simple scaling picture, that there's a Kondo screening of some sort provided the J here exceeds the critical value and otherwise you head off to weak coupling. Okay, so that would be nice and simple, but unfortunately it turns out to be incomplete. And so there are three major complications. I'm going to show you on the next page something which is a much more complicated version of this, and let me explain why. First of all, the first people to apply the NRG method, Chen and Jayaprakash, discovered that the Kondo fixed point is unstable for r greater than half, and this is purely, this is really simply a sort of thermoliquid feature that, because of the powers entering the problem, there are lots of relevant operators for r greater than one half. We showed that in fact the critical coupling JC goes smoothly to infinity as r approaches a half from below, and JC equals infinity for r greater than a half, and so in fact there isn't any Kondo effect. So in that case, the impurity decouples from the conduction band in all situations. This is for the model as I presented it before. So whatever value of J you start at, whether it's even if it's out of J is 100 times the bandwidth, a low enough temperature you should decouple from the system. Okay. Well, okay, that sounds like we've killed all the interest in the problem, but no. In fact, that's because so far we've only considered particle hole symmetric formulations. And it turns out the particle hole symmetry or asymmetry is an absolutely crucial fact in this problem. It's something which you don't think about in the standard Kondo model, because in the standard Kondo model, particle hole asymmetry is a marginal perturbation. And so you might have some scattering phase shifts from the impurity in the absence of Kondo coupling, but you simply add the phase shifts you get from the Kondo coupling and everything's fine. So it's totally marginal. It turns out here that that's not the case. First of all, any particle hole asymmetry, whether it arises from asymmetry in the band or from scattering from the potential type scattering, can be reparameterized as an effective potential scattering. So I'm always going to parameterize things in terms of a simple potential scattering proportional to the density of conduction electrons on the impurity site. And it turns out in this pseudo-gap model, potential scattering becomes irrelevant for J less than J critical in the weak coupling regime, just in the same way that locally around the weak coupling fixed point, the Kondo coupling is irrelevant. That's simply a density of states effect. But it turns out that this potential scattering is highly relevant in the strong coupling regime. And so as a result,
that applies to R smaller than 1.
Yes, that applies to, yes. I'll show you in a minute some diagrams, RG flow diagrams, which will capture all this. This is, I realize there's a lot of detail here and it's hard to capture, but in your mind, but yeah, so for what, it doesn't matter whether R is bigger than a half or smaller than a half, potential scattering is relevant to strong coupling. That means you have two strong coupling phases. You have one where you're sitting right at potential, you have one sitting here, which is the one we talked about earlier, where you have pure, where you have particle hole symmetry strictly. And then for any small asymmetry, it turns out this asymmetry will grow. And so there's some sort of asymmetric strong coupling. So that's one complication. Another third complication is that particle hole symmetry or asymmetry turns out to be crucial to describe the critical behavior as well. So I told you that for R greater than one half, JC became infinity. That's a statement which is true purely at particle hole symmetry. For V not equal to zero, JC is always finite, doesn't matter what the value of R is. So particle asymmetry restores a finite critical coupling. And secondly, it turns out that there's not one but two quantum critical points in the problem. One, particle hole symmetric. That occurs for all r between 0 and a half, because as I said before, for r greater than a half, this is the picture that applies. And then there's an asymmetric one. It turns out that the asymmetric one is not present for very small values of R. So if you try and connect perturbatively from the, or adiabatically from the standard Kondo problem, you wouldn't discover this, and so it was missed for a long time in sort of small R type approaches. But there's this asymmetric critical point which appears suddenly at some magic R star, which is approximately 3/8. Okay, and that's been, the only evidence for that, as far as I know, comes from the numerical renormalization group right now, but there's still some hints of it now appearing in the latest large N studies. Okay, so that's all pretty complicated. Let me try and summarize things. This may strike you as even more complicated, but if you want to, so what is this diagram? This diagram is showing you renormalization group flows as a function of decreasing temperature on two axes. This is the effect of Kondo coupling, the effect of potential scattering. If you had a pure metallic Kondo problem, what would you see? You would see a bunch of horizontal lines with arrows pointing off to the right. Potential scattering is a marginal operator, so whatever potential scattering you start off, whatever J you start off, you just head off to strong coupling, you have a Kondo effect. It's not nearly as simple as that in the power law Kondo problem. First of all, you have to recognize there are three different regimes of the exponent R. There's the small r regime, when there's only one quantum critical point. There's a regime between R star and a half, and then there's R greater than a half. And then let me try and explain what's going on. So in each of these regimes, there's a red line, and everything to the left of the red line flows off at low temperatures to weak coupling. So in anywhere in this region, potential scattering is irrelevant, and you flow off eventually to weak coupling. So in this case, the impurity decouples from the conduction band. There's a green, the green regime here, the green region is the part which flows to the symmetric strong coupling fixed point. This is the thing, this is the fixed point that was identified first by Witthoff and Fratkin. You see, this is a region of zero measure. Basically, it's always just on the line where V is equal to zero, and it vanishes. But basically, this point moves off to the right as R increases towards 1/2. And so as you get closer and closer to 1/2, you get to this point here, and R equals 1/2. This point merges into the strong coupling limit, and there is no such fixed point accessible for R greater than 1/2. And then in the whole of the rest of this region over here, you flow off to this asymmetric strong coupling limit where the potential scattering has dominated what's going on. And I'll explain a little bit about the properties of that in a minute. I've shown this in terms of dashed lines because actually the asymmetric strong coupling limit is not characterized by V equals infinity, but by another potential scattering parameter being infinite, as I'll explain. But anyway, you can think of this as being out of the plane in some way along the third axis. And then finally, we have this line. The red line is the line of points which flow to the quantum critical points of the problem. For R less than R star, there's simply one quantum critical point. It's a particle hole symmetric one. So you can start with a V not equal to zero, and by tuning your J, you can get yourself to a situation where you end up with a spectrum which ends up at the fixed point being particle hole symmetric. But for R greater than R star, that's not the case. In fact, for any non-zero potential scattering, there's an effective potential scattering at the critical point. And it turns out that wherever you start, as you tune your initial J at fixed V, you reach a spectrum which looks the same all the way along this line. So you're flowing to some unique fixed point here. And finally, this point disappears for R greater than 1/2. And so in that case, the separatrix looks something like that. So that's pretty complicated. And I'll hold on to this figure in case I need to come back. If you ask me which fixed point I'm talking about later, I'll put this up because it's quite a zoology of... compared to the Kondo model, the conventional Kondo model, this is vastly more spaghetti-like, I would say.
So can you put...
Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, please ask questions now because...
Can you put the non-trivial critical point, the ACP, is it unstable or not against the particle hole symmetry?
Right here?
Yeah, no, in this one. Yeah, so the particle symmetry is sort of like an irrelevant perturbation around it. You need particle
symmetry. Yeah,
but once you're there.
V minus VC is an irrelevant operator.
I see.
Yes.
So the scaling axis at this thing, one of the scaling axes is strictly vertical?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, so what you typically do in numerically is you fix your V and then you have a program play around using some bisection to find J critical. And J critical, this is showing fairly realistically the form. J critical usually decreases initially with potential scattering and increases with larger potential scattering. Eventually, potential scattering just drives some electrons away from the impurity side, so they can't condo-couple.
Right.
So what my statement was, the many-body spectrum you get at this point here is the same as the many-body spectrum you get at this point here and at this point here. And if you look at the critical behavior, it's cleanest at some VC in some sense. You start closest to the critical point for some initial value VC, and so that's what we call the critical potential and potential scattering. And also at this point, you can some ways, you can at least for small r, you can basically fit the spectrum to r equals zero plus perturbations. And again, you conclude that this V critical grows monotonically from zero as r exceeds r star.
Right, but at the ACP fixed
point. Whether or not it's vertical or not, I'm not making any statement on whether it's strictly vertical.
Well, what I mean is that you have one stable and one unstable direction.
Correct,
right?
Yes.
And they're probably all linear combinations of V and J.
Correct. There's some. I don't think it's vertical. I think
right.
You have to linearize around that point.
In that sense, if you stand at the ACP fixed point and you turn on a small deviation V minus VC, it's a relevant perturbation. It would take you away.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, you have to linearize this. You have to write down some effective
right.
scaling equation, linearize around that point, and yes, the eigenvectors would not be pure V and pure J.
Okay,
yes, I agree with that.
And so, this is a pretty remarkably complicated sequence of phase diagrams. And the various techniques, this is basically all NRG based, right?
Yes.
And the various techniques, other techniques that you pointed out.
So,
some bits and pieces of it.
Correct. The large N has done the best at getting something beyond. Most of the techniques have limited themselves to this axis right here. So, for instance, the local moment approach can identify that something happens at r equals 1/2, and there is no strong coupling limit for r greater than 1/2. But so far, they've done very little with the asymmetric case.
What about this thing that
Voschka
did using?
So he did a large N, large channel number limit, where you take the number of channels over the number of over the degeneracy is a constant. That I think did a good job. I'm limiting myself here to spin 1/2, but yet yes, I mean in the large, I think his is the most stable large N treatment. There has also been this work by Polkovnikov, where he also seems to have captured the fact that there is no. This is in a more conventional slave boson mean field theory. He's captured the fact that this point disappears for r greater than 1/2. But I have some. I have to. One of the things I want to do in the next few weeks is try and understand whether I don't think he has the critical exponents quite right.
The large N, large K thing. Does it get the r star?
I don't think so. This is an over-screen model. I'm showing you the exactly screen condo. I can show you similar diagrams for under-screen condo and over-screen condo, and there's even more spaghetti, okay? So I'm not sure that we should make a direct comparison. The method he used fermionic version of the spin, and therefore he's forced into the over-screen regime. Okay, so I showed you all these weird fixed points. Let me try and tell you a little bit about some of the properties. And the reason why I'm showing you some of this is to show you there are lots of exponents, but these exponents all relate in a rather trivial fashion to the exponent entering the density of states, unlike the ones I'm going to talk about later. So weak coupling, for instance, you have a free moment described by, and so I'm setting all universal constants to one, so T times time purity is 1/4, a free moment. There's some corrections which go like T to the power of the density of states. There's an impurity impurity entropy log 2 with some corrections. If you go to the Anderson model, then work by Buhler and co-workers have shown that the local impurity spectral function has a power law 0, again the power R enters. And finally there's a phase shift which is vanishing. So this is weak coupling. Is pretty much like weak coupling in the regular condo problem, except you get some funny powers entering from the density of states. The symmetric limit it seems a little bit more bizarre. So this is symmetric strong coupling. J goes to infinity, V is identically zero. There it turns out that the Kondo effect is not complete. You don't get a complete screening of the local moment. So T chi impurity is R over 8, some number which of course is zero for the regular Kondo problem, plus some corrections again with powers, which now usually go, these powers usually become divergent for some large values of R. There's a residual entropy, 2R log 2. So it's not complete screening. The spectral function, again, has now has a divergence, a power law cusp, as found by Buller. The phase shift undergoes a jump at the Fermi energy. It's not a jump of from minus pi to pi, as it would, pi to minus pi, as it would be in the regular Kondo problem. It's that times the factor 1 minus R. And if you calculate the impurity contribution to the density of states, you find that there's a delta function of weight R at the Fermi energy. Now, that may all seem a bit bizarre. It turns out it has a rather simple explanation, and it's not really anything too exotic. First of all, look at these properties here. If we had a U equals zero Anderson model, where you have an impurity level coupled to the conduction band, the impurity level is at the Fermi energy, then you have four states. It turns out that T chi impurity will be just 1/8, and S impurity in that case will be log 4 or 2 log 2. So we have exactly R times those properties. So the simple interpretation is that we have, that somehow we have taken, you're now using the language of the Anderson model rather than the Kondo model. You have an impurity sitting on the impurity site. Through hybridization, a fraction 1 minus R of that impurity gets absorbed into some many-body resonance. But the remaining fraction R occupies some decoupled free level at the Fermi energy, and so that contributes to these properties here. So we get some sort of fractionalization of an electron. Part of it gets absorbed into a many-body resonance, and part of it remains decoupled. Again, this might sound bizarre, but it turns out you get precisely the same properties for a non-interacting resonant level in this parallel density of states. It's purely a density of states effect. Because of this bizarre density of states, you would get just these properties for a U equals zero Anderson model, say. So this is basically just a density of states effect, and basically you can think of this as being some sort of non-trivial but rather straightforward generalization of the Fermi liquid properties we know from the standard Kondo or Anderson model. Okay, so now, so that one is strange but has a probably innocuous explanation. What about this asymmetric strong coupling? So let me, I was just talking about that fixed point right there. Now let me talk about this one up here. This guy has J equals infinity, V not equal to zero. Here we have a completely screened moment. We've lost all the impurity entropy, so this is more conventional Kondo-type behavior, except the phase shift now, rather than being pi over 2, we don't have unitary scattering anymore. We have a phase shift of pi times the sign, so there's a jump of 2 pi at the Fermi energy. If you look at the quasi-particle density of states, you actually have a negative delta function. In other words, the impurity has somehow pushed the conduction band state away. And the interpretation of this is that the impurity not only locks up the Vanier orbital right at the impurity site by screening out a local moment, it also, by producing such strong potential scattering, it actually freezes out any possibility of an electron sitting in the next shell. So, but anyway, the phase shift of pi implies that you would have zero impurity scattering. So the Kondo effect in this case is not observed in terms of an upturn in the resistivity going to some maximum at T equals zero. In fact, you'd have a peak, and then you would go down to zero again at sufficiently low temperatures. So you don't have the, by any means, you don't have the standard signature in the resistivity of the Kondo effect.
Okay. Why saying two Wilson shells? I mean, what does it mean
that
exactly two?
What I told you was that if you get to the symmetric strong coupling limit, which is some limit in which you have this fractionalization of an electron, this locks up the first Wilson shell, and now it turns out what happens is that potential scattering in the second Wilson shell is now a relevant operator, and that drives you away to the symmetric strong coupling limit. In this limit, you're forced either to have no electrons in this shell or two electrons in this shell. So this situation would be one of those limits, or this would be the other one. But there's no possibility for anything from the third shell hopping in and out of that. So, and basically you acquire a pi phase shift for each shell that you freeze up.
There's only two shells that enter.
Yes, exactly two. And because now we're back to a situation which is almost the same as the weak coupling limit. All the powers are the same as the weak coupling limit. And so actually the properties are going to be, we're going to have these t to the 2r's and these were the things I told you about at weak coupling as well. Yes?
I'm confused about the behavior of the susceptibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it behaves like, chi behaves like t to the 2r minus 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which means that for r small enough, it's the divergent.
I have to be a bit careful about that. There are some way in which this. No, this definitely goes to zero. I may be mistaken here.
R larger than a half.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's a mistake in that. I think that's not true for small r. I'll have to go back and check and get back to you. T chi impurity vanishes. Oh, sorry, chi. No, I'm not sure. I need to. This may be correct. T chi impurity certainly vanishes. I'm not sure. We may still have a divergence in chi impurity.
Right, but that would suggest that for very small r.
There are prefactors here of. So this term will vanish for r goes to zero. So I mean everything merges smoothly into the limit r equals zero. Maybe maybe we should talk about this in detail later. I don't want to confuse you by saying something off the cuff which is wrong.
I mean, it makes sense that the moment is more robust in the case that you have a pseudo gap.
Yes.
Than in the fully screen case.
No, that I understand. So you still expect that as r goes to zero is sort of the conventional case.
Yes, but it could be.
But as I said, the prefactor vanishes and something else becomes the leading term then.
It means that as soon as you depart a little bit from the constant density of states,
yes.
You would generate the diverging kind.
Well, think of in terms of the moment. You just have a little moment. It's very close to zero at zero temperature. It's not inconceivable because you have this tensor state, which is a gap.
So finally, let me, before I get on to the critical problems, let me just comment a little bit about the properties of these critical points here. Turns out those properties are non-Fermi liquid. They aren't simple multiples of log 2 in many cases, or if entropies and so on. Let me show you explicitly what I mean. The entropy, first let me show you T chi impurity.
Which R values do this apply?
What I'm showing you right now?
Yeah, well,
these statements here, so my
any R or?
No, the header of my previous slide said that it was R between 0 and 1. It turns out for R equals 1, there are various logarithmic corrections and so on, which I didn't want to get into. It's going to be hard enough to get through anyway. But yes, there are various corrections which we need to take into account for R equals 1, and then it turns out the powers change somewhat for R greater than 1. Excuse me?
Just by log.
Yes. Okay, so the weak coupling limit, T chi impurity, would be equal to 1/4. The strong coupling limit, R over 8, I told you about, was this dashed line here. And this is showing you what you get when you tune yourself precisely to the critical point. The fill triangles correspond to the symmetric case, and the circles correspond to the asymmetric case. This is certainly non-trivial. What it means, I'm not entirely sure. And then the entropy is log 2, the weak coupling value. It's a particle hole symmetry all the way until you hit R is 1/2. And here is the strong coupling limit. At R is 1/2, the strong coupling limit, its entropy rises to exactly log a half, and at that point, that limit becomes unstable. And there's a theorem, I'm not sure whether it applies, a theorem which I believe Andreas talked about at some point, called the G theorem, which says you can never flow from a fixed point which has low entropy to one of higher entropy. And so if you were to go into this regime here, if you flow from weak coupling with log 2 to an entropy greater than log 2, then that would violate this G theorem. So whether it applies to non-conformally invariant situations, I have no idea. But anyway, that provides some idea of why this fixed point breaks down. And then the asymmetric situation, the quantum critical point has an entropy which rises seemingly monotonically. But again, the precise reason for this, I don't know. It's just numerical facts. Okay, let me talk a little bit about the critical properties. Let me try and get to the experimental connection. So I have a couple of slides to talk about the critical properties. Most of the interesting properties of the critical point, although it has interesting thermodynamics, most of the critical properties show up in the response of the magnetic response. And it's not the magnetic response to a uniform magnetic field. It's to a magnetic field which couples solely to the impurity site. So it's a local response. So we define this is an order parameter for this, which is basically the expectation value of the impurity spin, and then the corresponding susceptibility. And it turns out, using numerical RG, that you find that you can extract critical exponents, sort of fairly standard critical exponents, describing the vanishing of the order parameter below the critical point, the divergence of the corresponding susceptibility above in the strong coupling regime, and then the behavior precisely at the critical point is characterized by exponents related to the magnetic field and temperature dependence. And let me show you, for instance, for now I'm just going to show you two of these exponents. The main point is they have a non-trivial R dependence. And they're not simply powers like R, which we found in most of the other properties, the spectral properties, the thermodynamic properties. They have the engineering dimensions. Okay, we don't get the engineering dimensions here. We get this beta exponent. This is describing what's happening on the weak coupling side. And we find this exponent diverges in the symmetric case at R equals 1/2. For R greater than, in the asymmetric case, it heads back down, and for all r greater than or equal to 1, or r greater than 1, I should say, it has the value 1, sorry, the value 0. That implies that m local undergoes a jump. So it's no longer a continuous transition. So you have a continuous quantum critical point, or continuous phase transition for r between 0 and 1. But for r greater than 1, we can't necessarily use the language of continuous phase transitions anymore. And then this gamma, which is describing what's happening in the strong coupling phase, has a non-monotonic behavior as a function of R in the symmetric case. It has some somewhat non-trivial behavior also in the asymmetric case. And I've switched from plotting 1 over gamma to gamma. It seems to vary, but in a sort of rather simple fashion. There's a simple formula saying that gamma is 2 minus R for R greater than 1. Okay, so we can get these static exponents out. We can get a little bit of understanding by trying to characterize this, describe this system by some sort of scaling form of a free energy. So the free energy turns out it can be parameterized in this fashion. It's a function of J minus J critical over some T to some critical exponent A, and then the local magnetic field over T to the B. And you can extract those from the four exponents beta, gamma, delta, and x I talked about. We have four exponents extracted from the numerics. We have two underlying exponents, so we have some hyperscaling relations between the exponents, and they're a beta, three decimal places, four decimal places. So this all holds together very nicely. So now I'm showing you these inner exponents, these ones which enter into the free energy. Here's A, here's B as a function of R. And again, non-trivial dependence. In the symmetric case, this A rises and then falls. Usually weird things happen at R equals 1/2. In the asymmetric case, it rises up towards 1. And then here's what happens to the corresponding exponent B. Let me just comment what happens if you try other methods. So the scaling method, Poisson scaling and the local moment approach essentially can give you A is equal to R. So they would give you this dashed line here. It's actually not a bad job, provided you look close to R equals 0 and close to R equals 1. But it breaks down away in this intermediate regime. The large N method Well, the large M method only really says what's happening in the strong coupling regime, where we have one exponent, gamma. So we can get gamma out, and it does a so-so job. It's okay. It's small r usually. If you apply the scaling ansatz, if you assume that this form is true, you can then ramp up and generate all the other exponents as well. And you would conclude in that case that you get this form here. This works only for small r, and it also gives you b equals 1. B equals 1, it turns out, tells you that you have a discontinuous phase transition. So the whole thing doesn't really hold together very well. So there's some work to be done trying to understand this. Okay, that's the statics. Let me show you one or two slides on the dynamical critical properties. So you can calculate the dynamical version of this local susceptibility. So so at the critical point, you can, here's the static properties with the exponent x I talked about previously. You can also introduce a dynamical exponent y, and what we find is that y equals x for all r between 0 and 1, and it's equal to gamma, which is which has a lower value for r between 1 and 2. Now the result, so here I'm showing you the exponent x, and this is the behavior of the exponent x, but y equals x for r between 0 and 1. So this is actually also, well, this is 1 minus y as well. This is a dynamical exponent for symmetric and asymmetric. And then also this line here is not just a fitting line. This line actually shows you the Kondo coupling squared at the critical point. So it turns out that fits very well to 1 minus x, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But even just the point that y equals x, the static exponent with respect to t is the same as the dynamical exponent with respect to omega. It's suggestive of omega over t scaling, although it doesn't fully show it. You know, in other words, that chi can be expressed as a function of omega over t times t to the minus x. And this would suggest that, in fact, you have a fully interacting critical point, quantum critical point. For r greater than 1, because it turns out the y is smaller than x, you have some sort of superlinear relaxation. This is suggestive of a non-interacting critical point. So again, r equals 1, the case that's of interest for NMR, it's hard to get to understand the critical behavior in that case because of all the logs, but it's obviously right on the borderline between critical and between interacting and non-interacting. To try and get some handle on this issue of the omega over t scaling, you can actually, it turns out, you can use a small r expansion. You can calculate this full function, dynamical susceptibility, for r much smaller than 1, just by using perturbation theory in J and using the usual method of finding the leading logarithmic divergences and connect. So you basically pull, find that the local susceptibility in imaginary time goes like with some exponent jc squared. And so we get a prediction out of this that x equals y equals 1 minus jc squared. That's the prediction, the line, this is the data. It applies even for r as big as 0.45, say, well out of the r much less than 1 regime. So this seems to be worked very well, even beyond this regime of justifiability. Also, this is the form of the function you get for the, this is the imaginary part of chi local scaled by omega to the y. Here's the scaling function extracted from this small r. This is what the numerical renormalization group does. Unfortunately, as I commented last Friday in Theo's talk, so far we haven't been able to get very accurate results in the regime where omega is smaller than t. So what this horizontal scale here is omega over t on a logarithmic scale. And at omega over t, about 3, things start to break down in the numerics. But we agree with the small r very well in the high frequency over t regime. And this shows data for two different temperatures. So the omega over t does apply numerically in the high regime. And I have an artificial omega over t scaling at low omegas, but I don't believe that behavior. This is the correct scaling behavior. Okay, so that was a whole lot of theory. It's gone on for 45 minutes or something. So let me quickly now try and connect this, or some of this at least, to the high TC experiments. So as we heard on Friday, non-Manning impurities induce local moments in high TC, which can be probed very nicely via NMR and ESR. And in particular, there are these beautiful experiments that Alul's group have performed, where they actually did NMR on the impurity side itself. They put a lithium impurity in, it induces a spin, although it's a non-magnetic impurity, induces a spin, and you could do NMR on that site. And the lithium night shift can be fit in the normal state to a Curie-Weiss form, which is very reminiscent of what was found in classic Kondo systems like iron and copper. And so this has been interpreted as a signature of a local moment. Also, there are squid measurements, etc., which show the presence of local moments. Very interestingly, this signal persists into the superconducting state. So here I've plotted 1 over the night shift minus some background constant, and here is the red points of the NMR, and there's a Curie-Weiss above TC. There's all hell breaks loose in this region here. There's flux lattice melting and all sorts of horrible things. But well below TC, you settle down again to something which is very smooth. And again, it can be fit, at least crudely, to another Curie-Weiss form. The difference is that above TC, the temperature theta is about 135 Kelvin. It drops by a factor of 3 as you go below TC. It's tempting to just interpret this in terms of the standard Kondo model, since this fit seems pretty good. This is the metallic Kondo model here. But if you think about it, and you think about the likely density of state change as you go from the superconducting state to from the normal state to the superconducting state, you conclude that you expect that ratio of Kondo temperatures the ratio would be a factor of 100, 1,000, 10,000, much more dramatic than is actually seen experimentally. So this actually, the experimental ratio is just a factor of 3. So this suggests that maybe a simple interpretation in terms of the conventional metallic Kondo effect is inadequate. Is there any theoretical connection between this and the pseudogap Kondo model? Well, of course, this is not a non-interacting conduction band problem. This is a correlated system. But nonetheless, if you start with sort of a D-wave, an impurity in a D-wave superconductor, at this point we're not going to say anything about the origins of the local moment. We just assume there's a local moment. So high energy physics determines the fact that due to the adiabatic correlations, local moments develop when you put non-magnetic impurities in. Forget that. Just assume we have a local moment, and start with this as your Hamiltonian. So various people have shown that this can be mapped onto a pseudogap Kondo model. The first work was done actually by my colleague Peter Hirschfeld, who was interested in P-wave superconductors, but the formal mapping was done for the D-wave case by Castanello and Fradkin. They map it onto a linear density of states. You can also try and solve the problem directly. There's been a lot of work on that in recent years. The general conclusion is that indeed you get the same sort of phenomena as you get in the pseudogap Kondo problem. There's a critical coupling. Below the critical coupling, the impurity decouples from the superconductor. Above the critical coupling, you get a strange Kondo effect. Is there any experimental evidence for this? Well, I think the first evidence came from some specific heat data on zinc-substituted YBCO from Kapotolnik's group. And I'm not sure how robust the details are, but this specific heat data shows this is data in the magnetic field carried out at temperatures which, this is 7 Kelvin here. It's on a T squared scale. First of all, there's no Schottky anomalies in this specific heat from residual free moments, which you would expect. So that suggests that the moments must be screened at low temperatures. And if you look at these lines here are actually fits to Castanello and Fradkin's predictions for the power law the D-wave superconductor, which is, as I said, it's basically the R equals 1 pseudogap Kondo model. It's a reasonable fit. There's some details which don't quite work, but basically this is a pretty good job. So that's some evidence in favor of this picture. In terms of the NMR data, one can try to go a little bit beyond the straightforward metallic Kondo model by fitting the NMR, the night shift, using some sort of density of states. Crudely, you could represent it like this. This is a D-wave density of states. We'll just imagine that we have a D-wave density of states, a non-interacting conduction band, which happens to have that density of states. It's important for this purpose probably that we include some infilling due to impurities or the magnetic field. The NMR experiments are carried out at, 5 Tesla or 7 Tesla? So it's quite a substantial field. It produces some infilling. So there's some sort of, take some sort of conduction band like this. The bandwidth D and the Curie constant C can be fit to the normal state data, and then after that, The only thing you have to play with is how close you are to the critical point. That's the one parameter that's left. And so here's some pictures. I don't want to. You can spend your life fitting the data and playing around. I don't think that's the main point of this. But here's the experimental data again. By fitting the bandwidth and the Curie constant to the normal state, this is this curve here. You can get here's the best thing that the standard Condon model can do, and you can get a somewhat better picture of what's going on by taking into account the D wave density of states. The difference is not earth shattering, but it's a sort of a quantitative improvement in the fit. These fits seem to indicate that first of all, there's strong particle Hall asymmetry in the problem. It turns out that particle Hall asymmetry is almost certainly generated automatically in the mapping from the superconductor onto the effective impurity problem. That's been done in great detail for an S-wave superconductor, and it's shown that the S-wave superconductor maps exactly onto a Condon model with a gap plus some strong potential scattering. And so I think again here, this is why this is required. Even if you had a symmetric D-wave superconductor, you need to have an asymmetric Condon model. Also, we conclude that we're very close, actually, to the critical coupling. So J is within a few percent, by accident or whatever, to the critical coupling in this optimally doped sample. So that leads you to the question, is there any chance that we can see the critical point, the quantum critical point? Could you tune through? So first of all, let me remind you that the lithium night shifters can be fit to this Curie-Weiss form. This parameter theta varies rather dramatically with the oxygen dope, with hole doping in the problem. So here I'm showing you a schematic, the standard phase diagram, doping versus temperature. Here's the superconducting regime. And here are cuts that have been taken in the NMR at three different dopings. There's an oxygen 6.6 sample, an optimally doped sample, and then an overdoped sample with 20% calcium. Here are the fitting parameters in the normal state. This is probably effectively a zero. Basically, we see an unscreen. It is, yes. So basically, the moment is unscreened in the underdoped sample. It's risen to 135 Kelvin in the optimally doped sample, and it's doubled again. Or double to 226 in the calcium 20% sample. If you look at the corresponding thetas in the superconducting state, it's again essentially zero over here. It's gone to 40 here, but it increases by a factor of only 3 as you go to the overdope case. this observation that the superconducting Condon temperature changes faster than the normal one is actually very suggestive that, in fact, you're very close to the critical coupling, because near the critical coupling of the pseudo-gap Condon problem, it has the property that the TK vanishes right at that coupling. So if this quantity is plummeting fast and this is changing more slowly, that suggests you're actually close to the critical coupling. Voiter and Buller have done this, have done some calculations where they've actually taken a relatively serious band structure calculation. They've taken doping-dependent gap values deduced from ARPA's measurements, and they've done some calculations, and they actually tried to calculate the effective value of TK. They call it T star as a function of doping. They have two different models here. This is for a single impurity. This is basically for a local moment resident on a single site on an impurity site. This is assuming that the local moment resides on the four nearest neighbor sites instead. But the main point is, in both cases, they would find that TK vanishes around its 10% doping, and it rises rapidly thereafter, and then it kind of levels off. This is, again, qualitatively what I'm saying is maybe what we're seeing happening in the experiments. However, in order to determine this and actually see whether you can get this theta superconducting down to zero, it'd be nice in Henri's spare time if he was to do a few more values of the oxygen doping, so that.
This is the T star in the superconducting state.
Yes.
Not the problem.
Yes.
Because we have at the same time the normal state one, which works.
But what I'm saying is I think that varies less quickly. I would hope
it should vary quickly.
The one in the superinducting state should vary more quickly.
Partly the case already for the 2-point.
Okay, let me. I have one slide on. So that's what all I can say right now on the NMR. There are these experiments are ferociously difficult, and it would be nice, for instance, if we had T1 in the superinducting state, but it's very hard to measure. And so we could do some comparison with calculations if we had that data. But I would say that at least. Qualitatively and semi-quantitatively, there's reasonable agreement between the pseudo-gap picture and the NMR data so far. Let me just have one view graph to try and make a connection to lattice systems. I'm running out of time, so let me just say. Okay, so the pseudo-gap Kondo model, the interesting thing about it is it has a critical local moment fluctuations, or critical local moment fluctuations which diverge at some quantum critical point. And the question is, can such a thing survive in a lattice? One reason you might think that that's plausible is that effective impurity models with non-trivial bars arise in the dynamical mean field treatment of lattice fermions and in extensions, extended dynamical mean field theories, such as the ones that Gabby Kotliar and Antoine and so on are working on. Now, the first thing is, can you see the pseudo-gap Kondo physics directly? So the first thing you might try to do is embed the pseudo-gap Kondo model, make that the effective impurity model, and see whether it self-consistently survives in the dynamical mean field theory. This is the work, so with Ralph Buller and Chimiao Si, I discovered a few years ago you can't do that, and there's a preprint out now where Voiter also says the same thing. It turns out that you can't stabilize in dynamical mean field theory. It appears a fermionic bath in which you have this power law node in the density of states. So that's a little disappointing, maybe. It turns out what happens is the self-consistency. I think the chemical potential, when you renormalize, when you work through the self-consistency, the chemical potential pushes the Fermi energy away from the node in the density of states. So you now have a finite density of states of the Fermi energy, and that gives you a restoration of standard Kondo physics. So you lose all your quantum critical points and things.
So again, I'm trying to understand exactly the statement. How is this done? Which problem you have in?
Suppose you take. Yeah.
Which problem are you trying to stabilize?
So we tried basically a Kondo lattice with I think it was on a beta lattice, and we said let's start with a solution in which the local Green's function is determined from it has this power law form. Now let's go iterate the self-consistency loop once. Right. And what you find is that you don't end up back at the same point. It seems that you get driven away from that effective density of states. Maybe it's not the complete answer to the problem, but we weren't able to.
What should you stabilize the pseudo gap in that case? That's what I understand.
Well, I'm not saying
solving the Kondo lattice problem.
Well, we were asking, can we find solutions of the Kondo lattice? Can we find exotic fixed points of the Kondo lattice which have this? This may be another solution which coexists with the solutions we already know. So that's what we hope to find. I mean, this was our first attempt to try and get to grips with cerium copper 6 gold. Okay, so we did this about 4 years ago, and we banged our heads against the wall and failed. Okay, so that led us to try these more exotic models. And you know, in the extended dynamical mean field theory, you can get an effective Bose-Fermi Kondo problem, and there it turns out, so in that problem, in this extended dynamical mean field theory, you couple the impurity to a fermionic bath, which basically is supposed to represent what happens when an electron comes to the site where the impurity is, and then it goes off and has interactions in the lattice and comes back again. And also there's a vector bosonic bath, which is describing the effect of the magnetic moments in the vicinity through the RKKY interaction, how they influence the local moment.
The extension consists in adding the bosonic bath.
Yes. And then you have a self-consistency again, and you have to have self-consistency both for the fermionic bath and the vector bosonic bath. You have to solve the impurity problem and then satisfy some self-consistency relations. And what's been found is that there are two distinct solutions. There's the both of them have a constant fermionic density of states. So again, we haven't managed to find so far any solution where you don't have, where you have any sort of node in the fermionic density of states. But you can get a subohmic bosonic density of states with an exponent gamma. And there are two solutions corresponding, I think, to gamma equals 1/2 and gamma, which is basically very close to zero. And so the one of these corresponds to the fairly well-known magnetic ordering transition of the Kondo lattice, where you have basically a spin density wave transition. But the other one corresponds to some sort of strange local critical point, where you have an effective lattice version of the Kondo temperature, which vanishes precisely at the critical point. And so as a result, you get something reminiscent of this pseudo-gap Kondo problem. You get critical local moment fluctuations just at the same time as the long wavelength fluctuations of the order parameter were going to go critical as well. And it turns out they can be tied together. It turns out that reduced dimensionality can facilitate this coincidence.
That's two dimensions.
Yes. Or at least quasi-two dimensions. And then if you do that, then you find features such as omega or T scaling, which are qualitatively similar to the pseudo-gap Kondo problem. But more importantly, some of these properties are properties which appear in the anomalous quantum critical point of cerium copper 6 gold. I won't go into the details of that now, but this is a very unusual system which has been studied extensively via neutron scattering and is found to have an anomalous susceptibility in which there is omega over T scaling with a fractional exponent, which cannot be explained in terms of a standard picture of STW-type transitions. And it appears also that this neutron scattering shows that this anomalous scaling exists over essentially the entire Brouillard zone. So it's local physics that's responsible for the anomalous exponents. So that's all I'm going to say on this for now. Let me just wrap it up by saying that. So I hope I've convinced you that the physics of a local moment coupled to a correlated host, or a host described by a non-trivial density of states which vanishes at the Fermi energy, either due to simply band structure effects or more likely in the correlated host due to some correlations, this can produce some exotic physics, a very rich phase diagram of thermodynamic properties. We got very non-trivial critical behavior, both in the static and the dynamical properties. And what's happening is you can basically imagine that at the critical point, the pseudo-gap drives the effect of Kondo temperature to zero. And so at that point, the screen local moments sort of unbind at the critical point, and you get a critical phenomena connected with that, and non-firm liquid behavior. What we would like to do is understand this better. We have a lot of numerical data, and we have some insight from approximation methods, but there's really no deep understanding of what the universality class of these quantum critical points is. We'd like to have some sort of field theory or something which can explain this at a deeper level. So there's a lot of work left to be done to understand that. And also, the interesting thing from the point of view of experiments is the tie-ins to impurity effects in high TC. And also, we believe that the pseudo-gap Kondo model acts as a sort of a training ground for trying to understand the more complicated phenomena which might occur in the lattice and cerium copper 6 gold and related compounds. Okay? Thank you for your attention.
Experimentally, there is a case which might be of interest, which would be the case of graphite.
Mm-hmm.
Because graphite has typically these
yes.
dimensions. But it's not so clear, because I have looked at that point just for teaching reasons, for physics, and I found out that most of the work which has been done on graphite is not really complete, because graphite is dirty
yes.
at some level, and so you never reach this. Also, for instance, our test with you, niceness, which goes like that, all the low energy physics in the actual samples doesn't seem to be simple because it happens. Okay. I don't know, sometime one will be able to.
Well, also, people have, the other thing is people are interested in constructing zero-gap semiconductors or near-zero-gap semiconductors for various technical applications. Now, I don't know that any experimentalist has studied the properties of magnetic impurities in those systems, but that would be nice from my point of view, purely to understand the pseudo-gap Kondo model and its experimental realizations.
Which are the cases with really very zero?
I don't remember the name. I don't remember which materials. I know that for certain applications, they they really want to have a smaller gap as possible. I mean, in terms, you know, at least sort of milli EV or something like that. Yeah, but in some systems you can tune as a function of doping. You can tune the gap through zero. You go from insulating. Well, I assume that the semiconducting systems, people have gone to the trouble of preparing them with great, usually with great purity. So maybe that's cleaner from the experimental point of view.
So are you suggesting putting spins in intentionally, spin full of purity?
The situation you are locating, which is this one, which you have only a partial screen,
I don't think that'll ever be seen, because that's an artifact of strict particle hole symmetry, and presumably the phase of Jupiter or something or other provides particle wave symmetry at some level. So at least from a theorist point of view, eventually at sufficiently low temperatures, you won't see it. Now, experimentally, of course, the window you're working in might be the symmetric window. But I think that's the least interest. I think the generic behavior with particle hole symmetry is the one you should look for, one that you should look for. And as I said, one of the signatures would be, for instance, in a normal state, you would find that the impurity contribution to the resistivity goes through a peak and vanishes at low temperature. It doesn't rise monotonically like in a standard Kondo system. So right. Well, in high TC systems, of course, it's complicated because the pseudo gap is changing. Everything is changing as a function of temperature. So it would be nice to go to simpler systems first.
Everything is complicated in high TC. It's even a miracle that something seems to be okay.
Well, there could be some analog of this in spin chains and things like that. There you have the one, the reduced dimensionality to worry about. But there are. And there are some analogous effects in Luttinger liquids and so on.
Having a good metal is somewhat hard. I don't know if in the organics, if they can put security, but they don't know the realization of that.
Yeah, so you have the problem that any impurity tends to mess up the chain and destroys your Luttinger liquid. So.
In the spin chains, usually they are really insulated. We are working. You spoke essentially of spin 1/2.
Yes.
If I take the case of nickel, which should be spin 1, experimentally it's clearly spin 1/2, at least less.
I assume that process takes place at high energies beyond. So I come in at some low energy effective theory where you already have a spin 1/2 that's robust and you can just apply the Kondo model to that. The problem of how you form that is complicated, and nobody certainly has an all encompassing viewpoint which takes you from scales of J down, scales of the J in the copper oxygen plane, 1,000 Kelvin down to 2 Kelvin or whatever.
A simple argument is that when you put spin 1 on nickel, you have the orbital charge dx square minus y square copper. So they play the same role as the whole. As the case of zinc or something like that, but the one which goes in the dz square doesn't couple that much, so it could be so weakly coupled that this one would behave as paramagnetic moment, and the other one would just be screened because it's the same as the spin of. So as you say, it might be higher energy, which decouples the two spins.
Thank you.